Welcome to the Elijah Rising podcast. Elijah Rising is an organization empowering women recovering from sexual exploitation. This episode is going to help you become more aware about the issue of sex trafficking and inspire you to take action.
Hey everyone, my name is David Gamboa. Welcome back to the Elijah Rising podcast. Today on the podcast, I have an old friend, Taylor Woodruff, who's been with Street Grace and That's Neighbors right. in Action and Rescue America. Yeah. And so I've known Taylor for a long time. This is his first time on the podcast. And today I'm getting to meet Catherine for the first time, and she is with Neighbors in Action. And we're going to talk about what Neighbors in Action is doing in the east side of Houston, also called the Port of Houston or the Ship Channel area. And so why don't we start off this episode by just telling us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how you got involved in doing this work?
Catherine, why don't you start?
Sure. So, as you can hear, I'm from South Mississippi. No, I'm from Germany. and I actually, you know, got to Houston through a lot of different, life happenings. So yeah. I studied Latin American studies in Germany and lived abroad in South America for a while to work for humanitarian aid organizations, Christian organizations. And then met somebody in Chile who introduced me, who's from Texas, and introduced me to her friends when I visited her. And one of them is my husband now. So I ended up in Houston and was asking God how he would use all the skills I had learned, you know, the language and the cultures and all the work, how I had ended up in Houston with all that. And so he opened the doors for me to Neighbors in Action and said, here, this is why I brought you all the way here. I tell you a little bit more about Neighbors in Action later, but that's how I ended up here in Houston. Yes.
Yeah. Mine's less exciting, but you know, you and I used to co-office when I was at Rescue America, and we had our office together on 11th Street. And you know, I was a hotline manager for Rescue America, and part of my job was overseeing the calls we would get for people needing rescue or out of, you know, being trafficked, and facilitating that transition to a safe home or domestic violence shelter. And we get all these calls, and you know, some days it'd be quiet. Some days, you know, we get 10, 15 calls. But you get these calls and have these long conversations with people, and our hotline people would take these calls, and then we'd never hear from them again. You know, and as a guy, you're guarded between what you can really interact with someone who's a survivor of trafficking. And I really was missing in my heart that ability to build relationships with people and make an impactful change and have fellowship and see that fellowship grow. And I was connected through Neighbors in Action because my mother is a pastor, and you know, I've spoken there, and she told me about Neighbors in Action, and it was the first time I heard of Denver Harbor or the port area.
Yeah.
But I just remember driving through, you know, before I met with Catherine, and I just fell in love with the area.
Yeah.
It is a tug of my heart that has yet to be, you know, likened to anything I've experienced before.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because I feel like a lot of people in the Houston area don't really know where the Port of Houston is or Ship Channel. It feels like it's right. very far away from downtown mm-hmm. Houston, but it's really a major part of our city. And I just wanted to read some stats. Port Houston is considered a food desert, has no health facilities, pharmacies, or grocery stores. The student demographics of Port Houston Elementary reflect the community. 99% of the students are Hispanic. 98% are low income. 68% are English language learners. And 95% of parents that you guys work with have not completed high school in the U.S. or their home countries. So that gives you a little picture of the area, but could you just better describe kind of the community for our listeners that just aren't familiar with that area?
It's very surprising to me that people who have lived their whole lives in Houston sometimes don't know the East very much. We're really just 10 minutes east of downtown. If you go I-10 East and exit McCarty, it's the last exit before I-10 East. And so Port Houston is basically that area, that neighborhood. When you get off McCarty, you'll see a lot of industrial commerce. There's a lot of trucking companies because we're right at the Ship Channel. And you wouldn't think, when you drive down the street, you wouldn't think that right behind those companies, those trucking companies, there are houses on both sides. And it's, I think the community used to be a Polish immigrant community, and the houses there are over 100 years old. A lot of them are really in very bad shape, and they have just never been, you know, maintained. A lot of our people rent these houses from landlords who know their situation and know they can't go anywhere else because a lot of them are undocumented. I'd say about 90% of the people we work with live in mixed status households. And so a lot of times they don't really have the agency to advocate for themselves and for better living conditions. So a lot of the houses have mold, their ACs don't work, things don't get fixed, and people just feel, well, where else will we go? Because in other places, they're going to ask us for, you know, credit scores or all sorts of things to rent an apartment. So they sometimes they just feel they're stuck there and they have to take whatever the landlord gives them. And it's being taken advantage of for sure.
Yeah. And so what I love about Neighbors in Action is like you're planted in this community. So you understand, you know, the people that you're serving. But you're also right there, you know, like Elijah Rising, we're doing outreach to many different areas. And a lot of times we're not planted as deep as we'd like to be in a community, but you guys are. And tell us a little bit about what Neighbors in Action does, what type of programs you provide, who do you serve to help people get a better understanding of kind of what your mission is.
Sure. So Neighbors in Action was started in 1995, actually, by First Methodist. So it's always a ministry. And originally, it was like a bus ministry. So they would take the kids downtown to the church once a week for 17 years and had like Bible study and like a little tutoring and games. And the vision of the missions director was always to be in the community because there was no connection to the parents. It was like taking the kids out once a week, but not seeing an impact in the community, really. And so they were looking for a long time to rent a little house or to rent a space. And finally, they found like a 1,200 square feet house in 2012 and moved the program there. And that's when I started working with the organization. It was just me part-time in the beginning, and we've just grown from there. So we continued that one program for about 3 months and then added like a youth program. And so right now, we really serve people 7 days a week. We have our main focus is faith-based programs. We have Bible studies and fellowship times and prayer groups for all age groups. So Monday through Sunday, we offer these opportunities. We had started with the kids and the youth, and then really my desire had always been to reach the parents, and so we've we have a fantastic moms group, about 65 moms that are part of, so they meet on Thursday, they meet several times a week, but on Thursday is like the main coming together. It's about 3 hours, it's fellowship, it's Bible study, it's praying for each other. And for me, we also offer educational assistance and basic needs, but my favorite part is just to see how people grow in God and together as a community and how that overcome so much trauma that they have been through. People who've experienced drug wars and gang violence in their home countries, a lot of them who've seen family members die in the hands of gangs or who needed to flee because they knew their son was going to be next in the gang. Yeah. And so to me, it's like a group where the moms have learned that there's other women out there with the same kind of trauma. I mean, we also have issues sometimes with domestic violence. And as we get later into, I know of some moms who are former victims of human trafficking. And so a lot of them tell me, I didn't even know there was anybody else out there. I didn't trust anybody. I just came here and all to myself, and I found a community, and I found a lot of healing through these programs. And so to me, it's really important. And we've started working with the dads. We do a lot of couples workshops. And I've had great testimonies about how it has improved marriages or partnerships. And to me, that's just the joy that's what I love most about. We do have those education opportunities because we try to have a holistic approach. We know that people, if they're lifted out of poverty, are less vulnerable to other things in their lives. And so we offer tutoring. We work with a school, Port Houston Elementary School, have a really close partnership to offer after-school clubs as well. And then during COVID, we kind of had to stop a little bit with our adult education programs because, moms were just really focused on getting the kids through school year. But we used to partner with a lot of organizations that would bring in classes like parenting classes and computer and financial literacy. And we're gearing that back up right now that we're kind of out of the pandemic, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I love also about Neighbors in Action is a medium in which we can connect the community with other services. You know, we can have a mobile vet clinic for people who have pets, or doing flu shots, or partnering with the Houston Food Bank, because like you mentioned, it is a food desert. There are no CVSs, there are no grocery stores. And so becoming an area where we can give access to people in the community, those things that largely a lot of us have that are readily disposable to us, that's one of the things I'm really grateful that Neighbors in Action does.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's important. I like to tell people, you know, just in our space of fighting human trafficking, everyone gets, you know, you might get a passion for doing something like that, or you might feel called to do that. And a lot of times we lose sight of the actual needs of the community mm-hmm. that could prevent people yes. from being in the trafficking situation. Right. So, there are three P's when it comes to fighting trafficking. It's prevention, protection, and prosecution. And I love that you guys are so focused on the prevention piece, because there's a lot of people doing awareness, a lot of people, you know, providing direct care to survivors of human trafficking, which you need all those things. But mm-hmm. we also need people on the prevention side, where you're being involved with young people mm-hmm. before they get to the place of being groomed into trafficking or anything like that. Absolutely. Or even just educating. I know you guys do education about mm-hmm. human trafficking, labor trafficking, because a lot of people really, they don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who have been trafficked don't even realize that they've been a victim until years later.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so let's talk a little bit more about, you know, trafficking in that area. What does it look like?
Well, most commonly we see trafficking happening in the cantinas that we see surrounding the area. Most recently, a verdict was reached on a trafficking case that happens about two blocks from where we're located. It's a place called Puerto Alegre.
Puerto Alegre.
Yeah, there you go. And where a mother and son were, you know, there's three different factors when we talk about trafficking. There's force, fraud, and coercion.
Yeah.
And, you know, because of economic disparities and language barriers and undocumented statuses of a lot of the people in the community, they're a lot more vulnerable to trafficking. And so in this scenario, we saw someone who was promised a waitressing job at this bar, then was being pimped out to customers there for $70. And, you know, because the trafficking that happens there, the undocumented status, they feel like they don't have the ability to contact police or contact anybody in fear of deportation or being arrested themselves. So we see a lot in cantinas, but also we see a lot in the labor trafficking. You know, it's a very, as Catherine mentioned, it's a very heavily industrial area. So we see a lot of times where people don't have a lot of means to work, where that's taken advantage of by a lot of people in the area.
Yeah, and the place that you were talking about is mm-hmm. like right down the street from where your center is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. all of these places are within mm-hmm. like a 5-minute walking distance from mm-hmm. where we're at.
Wow. And I will say a lot of people don't know about it because a lot of the other trafficking spaces we talk about, they're all advertised online. Mm-hmm. A lot of these cantinas don't have any online presence. Some of them will not show up on like a Google Maps right. or anything you search right. like that. You have to be in the community, word of mouth. You know what that place is and what they offer.
That's something we see a lot of in our community is word of mouth being told, you know, and a lot of the trafficking that we hear about comes from word of mouth from the families that we talk to. And that's, you know, where we become most prevalent to that. But you look at Bessonette, that's a highly visible area. Almost everyone, you know, it's almost nationally recognized as a red light area of Houston. But we look at the Port area where it's because of the undocumented status of people there, because of the economic vulnerabilities, because of what's going on, it's not that visible.
Yeah.
And so it's more on our part needed to be able to look for that, to address it.
Yeah, and historically there have been some of the most egregious trafficking cases mm-hmm. happen out there. Like I think we were talking earlier and you were telling me about how y'all were doing the bus ministry, and it was around that time where they did like this major bus. I mean, it was like yes. several homes, several cantinas are all operating, you know, in a ring. So mm-hmm. Trafficking is very, very prevalent in the community. Do you think people in your programs feel safe talking about it, or is there like a fear because of the organized crime component?
I think if they feel comfortable with anybody, it would be with us. It doesn't mean that we always know, but I have had several conversations with people about it. Because we're trying to build up this trust. We're not just an organization, an institution where people go and get a benefit, but we're really trying to be a family. We know each other very well. I mean, I would say we know where every one of our children and youth and families live. We've been mm-hmm. to their houses. We've been to the baby showers and weddings and quinceañeras and funerals. So I think there's just this, we're very tight-knit. We're trying to be a family, and I think in that sense, we have to trust, and that has been built over years to where people, that doesn't mean, I'm sure there is things out there that we are not aware of, but I do think we have the trust now that, as we talked about earlier, just a couple of months ago, a mom came to us, and she knows Taylor's background, and she mm-hmm. started telling about what's going on across her the street and what she's observing that sounded like very strongly like mm-hmm. human trafficking. I don't know if you want to
right and it was that. A mom that just referenced like, hey, you know what, and they're across the street, and while she's telling us this, she was very, very afraid of mm-hmm. the repercussions of speaking out on this.
Yeah.
And she's telling us this place right here is an area where girls come and go, very young girls, you know, with the probability that they're being trafficked to the canteen down the street. And, you know, Neighbors in Action being a place where we come together, we pray, we worship, we serve one another in so many different capacities, to have that trust for them to tell us that, and then for me to follow up through the proper channels so it can be investigated.
Yeah.
So we hear about it through word of mouth, but, you know, there's such a fear of not just from law enforcement, but from traffickers that live in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of, you know, if they speak out against her, if they even talk about it,
yeah,
or if they even mention it, call a tip line, you know, there's going to be repercussions. And a lot of these are organized crime connected to family. I mean, a lot of these families we have still have family back in Mexico. So, you know, there's a threat that's not only going to happen to them, but a threat to what's going to happen to their family
back home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we're going to keep talking about, we're going to dig deeper into this topic a little bit more after this quick break. Hey, thank you for listening to the Elijah Rising podcast. If this episode has impacted you in any way, let us know. Go on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, or go to our website and send us a message. Let us know how these episodes have impacted you. And we provide this podcast and our services of doing outreach into the community and bringing awareness to human trafficking and 24/7 housing. We provide all of this free of charge. And we're only able to do that because people make donations and people support and get behind this work. And so if you want to be a part of that, you can go to ElijahRising.org/donate. And giving $10 or $20 a month goes a really long way. And I would encourage you to take that step and join us in the work to end sex trafficking. Hey everyone, welcome back. So we're just going to jump back in. And I thought of this story that we had dealing with someone coming out of the poor area. Mm-hmm. We had got a call from a local pastor of a Spanish church, and he was telling us, you know, this lady came to his church. She was needing help. She only spoke Spanish. So, you know, we were able to get a bilingual volunteer to take the call. And she began to describe her journey into the U.S. with her family, and she was basically labor trafficked and sex trafficked, but her family was being labor trafficked and living in one of the factories in the Ship Channel area. And so we talked about, you know, the cantinas being there, but it's also an industrial area. So
that's right.
Labor trafficking is a reality. So maybe share a little bit more about what you see in that area and what are the kind of factors that perpetuate labor trafficking, sex trafficking.
Absolutely. You know, just like how Catherine was saying, when you think about the port, a lot of people kind of associate, oh, that Galveston area, very, very, you know, very far. But the port, you know, it's inside the loop and 10 minutes from downtown. And it's a heavy industrial area. You know, you don't really see the water. You just see a lot of factories surrounding it. You see a lot of recycling areas. You see a lot of, you know, boarding off, you know, or unloading of things and recycling and wooden pallet factories and 18-wheeler, you know, maintenance centers. So there's a lot of industrial factoring going on in that area. And because of the vulnerabilities we mentioned of being undocumented, not being able to speak the language, there's a lack of opportunity that's available to them to have the ability to, you know, get a well-paying, better job. So that is a vulnerability that traffickers seize upon by saying, hey, you know what, you want to make a quick buck? Or hey, you know what, when there's a natural disaster like Harvey, where there's a need to rebuild and restructure things, you know, ads go out online saying, hey, you don't want to make a quick buck, you know, come do this. And payment isn't restored. Payment, you know, or things are promised where you end up sharing a hotel room with eight other families, you know, and someone comes, picks you up, you're forced to work, and then drops you back at that hotel room, and you don't see any payment.
And threatens you to report you because you're undocumented. So I think that has a lot to do.
Right.
Yeah. And so have y'all seen trafficking increase because of the natural disasters like Harvey or even the freeze, you know, that just a couple years ago?
And because of the undocumented status, a lot of our families aren't eligible to receive a lot of like federal relief that a lot of us are, you know, able to get.
Yeah.
So then, you know, the needs that need to be given or received to help recuperate those things have to come from other sources, from traffickers. So we see a lot of that happening around the area.
Yeah. And then, you know, what other types of vulnerabilities are you seeing, like especially within the youth kind of in that area?
I think a lot of times we see in the youth, we see just an area that is very hard to come by, which is, you know, success and achieving, going to college, doing those things where there's a factor where parents, let me go back to that, sorry. And try to figure out how to frame that question.
That's the beauty of the editing.
Yeah. No, that's a good question pertaining to our youth. Say the question again.
What are the vulnerabilities
to the youth?
Yeah. All right, man. So the average age of someone being trafficked is 14 to 16 years old.
Yeah.
So what we try to do is, you know, we try to reach, you know, I work for Street Grace also, and we have what's called a Youth Leadership Academy, where we go in and we teach kids on how to recognize signs of exploitation. And these are things that kids are aware of. You know, they hear about the trafficking stories from the parents. They hear about the things they hear at school, whether it's, you know, people taking advantage of, you know, cyber sex trafficking or predators online that do that. And what's really difficult is because of the immigration problem, there's a generational gap of what parents know about online safety.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. not the same for a lot of other parents out there that have iPhones that have, you know.
It's always something new.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And that was even heightened during COVID, where a lot of our kids didn't have computers, didn't have those things. And a lot of, you know, our kids come from working families where there's not a lot of people at home to monitor the online behavior. So that's another vulnerability that we see with our kids, is that oversight of what they're doing online.
Well, yeah. Especially the language barrier too. Like a lot of kids, they do their stuff in English and parents don't even understand mm-hmm. what they're doing. They're scared to ask. They don't understand the school system. And so there's just a big gap, and, you know, between those generations and the mm-hmm. youth, you know, as right. teenagers are, they go on their phones, and parents just have no idea on how to protect them. And again, as we said before, parents don't like to report things that they see because they're undocumented a lot of times. So it's the fear factor. They don't understand. It's the language barrier. And they're just in general vulnerable because of their financial situation.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's so important, reaching the youth. And I love that that's one of the main focuses in what you're doing.
Taylor's actually Taylor, yeah. director.
Junior yes. high and high school, yes. man. That's
that's a really crowd. It's very, very humbling, you know.
It's a tough crowd, but I love him. They won't show it. Yeah. They do it. They come every week faithfully. Mm-hmm.
So what does that look like? Is it daily, or is it weekly stuff you're doing with the youth?
Weekly stuff, and then we do stuff on weekends. I think having the exposure. You know, one thing I forgot to mention about the port area is it's surrounded by train tracks. You know, it's literally, and those trains stop
on three sides.
Yeah, and so those trains will stop for 30 or 45 minutes, and it kind of is like a metaphor for the gatekeeping that goes on to access to other things. And so a lot of things we do is, you know, this summer we have college tours lined up. You know, we are going to, you know, Museum of Fine Arts and listening to classical music and
overnight college tours.
Yeah, yeah. College yeah. tours, and also Bible studies is a big thing. And the story I love to tell is, you know, creating exposure to the opportunities that are out there really stirs their faith and imagination. We took some students to Lone Star College, and I remember one of them saying, you know, I could, you know, really study welding. I could get into that. You know, welding sounds cool. And then a week later, we went to Rice University, and the same student said, yeah, you know what? I could see myself doing philosophy. You know, I could, you know, yeah, I could do that. You know, and so I think the both are great professions.
Yeah.
But having that exposure and showing them the aptitude of what they can achieve in life really breaks that generational cycle of poverty that we see that's really prevalent in the port area.
Yeah.
And I think also, I mean, what we've tried to do every year is also a mission trip. And mm-hmm. due to, you know, immigration issues, we've tried to do an international one before, but then it excludes half of the students. So we've yeah. done it, you know, within Texas, and we've done it within the community. And I just love seeing people, like the youth, really leaning into that and stepping mm-hmm. up and saying, wow, like I'm actually needed in this society, because a lot of times they feel kind of, you know, overlooked, overseen. They don't belong. They're like in between, you know, the generation. Like they don't really belong to their parents' culture anymore, but they also don't fit in here sometimes. And so it's just been gorgeous to see how they really lean into those service projects and helping the community around them.
Just the compassion they have for others
yes.
in the immigration experience. I remember when there was a lot of people were fleeing Afghanistan, and Houston was one of the main areas they had come to.
Yeah.
A lot of the students, we had the opportunity to talk about what their immigration experience was like and write letters to those incoming families of saying, hey, wow. you know what, like, I'm an immigrant here. I remember coming here to Houston, and this is, you know, what I would want to say to you. So not only the service projects, but Houston's a very diverse area and community. And so to have people that can relate to, you know, because I can't relate to it, you know, what it's like to come to this country, but to be a part of a student's journey and hear their stories and share that stories with other people who are maybe going through the same thing is really beautiful.
Yeah. And why don't you talk to a little bit like the role of faith in, because, you know, Neighbors is actually a ministry, Elijah Rising, we're a ministry, like we yes, we do the tangible things of like providing mm-hmm. resources, but there's so many like impossible situations yes. that yes. our clients are faced with. Yes. And people are like, how do you like do that? And it's yeah. literally like, my answer is like, it's faith. Like we mm-hmm. pray,
yes.
we see God move. So why don't you share a little bit to that piece, kind of what you're seeing the Lord doing in that yeah. area?
I mean, to me, it's really important it's that we're not an organization that just helps people, but it is really motivated by God doing his work, and we're just being his hands and feet. I think I truly believe we're the one body of Christ, and we try to live this in the community with really feeling like we're connected. You belong to me, I belong to you. And so it is true there's things we can't like tangibly solve, and really the faith is the only thing that can keep you going in situations like that. But I just see God's hand move when we are just unable to do what we need to do. I mean, for me, I think as I had a strong faith when I came on, but I think I've learned more and more about spiritual warfare in this work, and to really see like with those spiritual eyes, the battles that are going on, and to really claim the spiritual space. I mean, we have a physical presence, and claim this authority that we have, and, you know, and kick everything else you know, that doesn't belong there to the curb, because we claim that God, you know, is in here in this neighborhood. And so we, with volunteer groups, we make sure when large groups come, what can they do? We say, well, the first thing you can do is walk through the neighborhood and pray. So have prayer walks. Again, during COVID, it kind of stopped a little bit, but to really make it clear and, you know, to remind each other, because mm-hmm. we all get worn down. It's like, oh, I don't even know how we can approach this, but to remember that there's another battle in the background, and, you know, to make sure prayer is always number one in everything that we do.
See, I love this, because this is so much our DNA. Mm. Like our highest value is prayer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand that, because they're like, you're wasting your time. Like,
right.
And it's like, I can't explain it, but just when you pray, just stuff starts happening.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Things start coming together when, you know, it's been hard or it's been challenging. Yeah. And it's just like, there's an ease to it, or at least you get a grace to endure. Yes,
exactly. I feel the grace to endure is what I most often receive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just a different, not just, oh, this family is struggling. Okay, but what's behind all of that? You know, I mean, we have this one family that we keep like, oh my gosh, all these bad things are happening. But we know that there's, you know, how in the Mexican culture, they often use like what they call La Santa Muerte.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, which has nothing with saint about it, you know. And so to just see things differently, and especially in the area of human trafficking, there is so much of that going on. It's first of all spiritual.
We're starting to see more and more of that, where there is a religious component that is keeping people in their trafficking situation because of fear. And, you know, real fear of bad things happening to them, curses.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it's great that you understand that, because a lot of people will just write that off. If you don't have a supernatural worldview, you just say like, oh, you're crazy. And that's not happening to you. But in that culture, and I believe everyone, we're all experiencing some type of spiritual warfare. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
But they understand it, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, it's real.
I think, you know, when we talk about prayer, we look at it as a great healer and reconciler. You know, we all have a battle. We all have a past. And I can speak for what Neighbors in Action has meant for me. You know, I started in the same month I lost my dad.
Wow.
And to be welcomed, you know, I like to say I lost one family member, but I gained about 30.
Wow.
And just to be surrounded by a group of staff members and families that pray and look out for one another, it's really been a blessing for me, and it's something that I just, you know, I think that's, like you said, it's in the DNA of who we are, and it builds trust and fellowship that allows us to do what we do because we pray, we share, we worship together.
Yeah.
And I just love when I ask a mom if she can do a testimony for a video that we need, like in 95% of the cases, they will not talk about the rent assistance they got, or they will talk about how they felt empowered with the faith that they have received to tackle their lives. They will talk about experiencing God in a new way. They will talk about how they felt like being part of this body of Christ. And so to me, that's just very powerful. And those are people who probably have received, you know, assistance as well. But what they take with them is something more than just rent. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I kind of want to wrap up with just talking about, and Taylor, you hit on this piece of family, the need for mothers and fathers, and y'all do a really good job of, like, you have this mom's group, they're doing a Bible study, like 65 people, that's really incredible. And I think just this last year you set a goal to reach the fathers to help them be more involved spiritually in their children's lives. And so can y'all share a little bit about the need for not just women in the anti-trafficking ministry, but, you know, we also need men too. Mm-hmm. And
absolutely. I think we talked about this earlier, that a lot of times, I mean, for us, it's really important that children see what a healthy marriage looks like how a dad is supposed to treat the mom. So we focus a lot on couples workshops. We're actually also going to start a worship service on Sundays to have the dads come in and be part of that. And to us, that's just really important to show kids, because if a girl knows how a father is supposed to treat the kids and also his wife, then they will hopefully less easily fall into a trap of thinking something is normal that's really exploitative. Is mm-hmm. that a word?
Yeah. Yeah.
My German sometimes, you know. So yeah.
I think also when we talk about, you know, the kids come here or the families come here, we get, you know, we spend time with them, but, you know, what do they do outside of that? What do they do back home? You know, where, and so even with the kids, we talk about what relationship as parents look like. You know, teenagers, you feel like you get a job, or you get, you know, you feel like, okay, I can do my own thing, but we work on what that dynamic looks like with the parent as well for students, which is something that I think it's just as important, you know, like what's that family dynamic look like? Because a lot of the families we are connected to are very large. You know, we're like five brothers and sisters, and there's a lot of things that go on. And so we work together as a group of students. I'm like, how do we work that? How do we find God in that dynamic? How do we reflect Christ and what healthy relationships with our parents look like?
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for coming on the podcast. I'm real glad we got to meet for the first time. I feel like we're going
to
work closer together now that I know y'all. And how can our audience like connect with what Neighbors in Action is doing? What's the best way to stay in touch?
Definitely follow our Facebook page, just Neighbors in Action, and also our website, www.neighborsinaction.com. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you know, you can put my phone number in there later. Yes.
You know, we have programs every night of the week. You know, we have, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We have programs for, you know, children to high school to middle school, group for moms. So there's opportunity, whether it's, you know, coming to help with the kids, or, you know, volunteering with us on a Saturday to do a food distribution, or just doing a prayer walk, you know, coming through. Yes. Just how Leisure Rising does van tours to show the areas, you know, and prays over those areas. You know, come pray over our, you know, neighborhood. Come pray, you know, at our center, and just see what God's doing in that area.
Yeah, well, we'll take you up on the offer, and I encourage each one of you to go show them some love on Facebook, get involved, go do a prayer walk, donate, volunteer. Share this episode with your friends, repost it to your page. Again, this is a really important topic not many people are talking about, but you heard it on the Elijah Rising podcast, so let's spread the word about the good work that's being done in the Port of Houston, and, you know, the future work that needs to happen and the awareness that needs to happen. So thank you guys for coming on the show.
Thanks, David.
Thank you so much.
It's my honor to have y'all.
Likewise. And,
we'll catch you on the next episode. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode. If you were inspired by this content today, please share, rate, and leave a review. Also, please consider making a donation at elijahrising.org/donate. Your support helps us continue the vital mission to combat sex trafficking. Until next time.